From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. One of the most celebrated singers of her time, Linda Ronstadt looks back on her 40-year career in her memoir, Simple Dreams, and she'll join us to discuss her career, which brought her 12 Grammy Awards and an Emmy, her political activism, and her recent battle with Parkinson's disease. That's next up after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. One of the most popular female recording artists of her time, Linda Ronstadt was known as the Queen of Rock and graced the covers of Time, Newsweek, and Rolling Stone, as well as winning 11 Grammy Awards and an Emmy, and rising to double platinum-selling status. Known for the wide range of her musical styles, the Arizona native rose to stardom in the 60s and 70s in Southern California and now lives largely here in the Bay Area. She recently published Simple Dreams, a musical memoir, a book all about her 45-year career in music, and she joins us in studio for the second hour. And good to have you back, Linda Ronstadt.
It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
A while back, I remember asking you, when are you going to write an autobiography? Well, I don't think I want to write an autobiography, you said at the time. If I do, I want to write mainly about music. That's what you've done.
I did. So, see, I tell the truth. I don't remember the conversation, but I think what would have kept me is that I never had any experience writing. I don't have a craft of writing. And I'm a reader, so I understand that this is important.
You are a reader, an addicted reader. That's your only addiction, in fact, I think
it's
you've said
true.
Publicly. But this goes back to your early years, and it's really a very compelling narrative. Tucson, and growing up in a family filled with warmth and love, I mean, which, you know, isn't necessarily the average rock star story, but also being exposed to so much music, to Gilbert and Sullivan, to jazz, to folk, to opera, to musicals. I mean, you've got a lineage here.
I thought everybody listened to everything all the time, you know. When I was a little girl, I remember going to school and starting to sing. We went to Catholic school and we'd sing these little hymns, and the children would all be and I'd be singing away, you know. It was like the one thing I knew how to do that day.
Well, it's not only you, but your whole family, it turns out, mainly. I mean, your dad had a possible career with Paul Whiteman. Your grandfather had a band that he was in. That's what I mean by a lineage.
An oompah band.
An oompah band, right. You've got a pedigree. You've got a music pedigree. And
Also, all my cousins and aunts and uncles sing and play, too. They don't do it at a professional level, but they do it well. Everybody sings pretty much in tune, and they know pretty many of the words, and the rest of it's la, 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 and they know when to get in and when to get out.
Well, I was even struck by a story about you and your brother both at different times hearing Rosie Clooney singing It Might As Well Be Spring on the Today Show, and both of you crying.
And neither one of us are crybabies. I'm telling you, my brother's chief of police in Tucson for years, and he's not a hard-bitten guy. He's a very good guy, but he's not a crier. And I'm, you know, if you had bit me on the leg, I'd probably spit in your eye, but you can't make me cry. So, but music makes me cry, and I heard Rosemary start to sing that, and I just burst into tears. And I was talking to him months later, and he said, oh, wow, I was up, you know, hearing this Good Morning Show, and I heard Rosemary Clooney, made me cry. You know, it was that song. I don't know, it's very poignant. I don't know, music has that ability. Ballet, too, I can start crying at the ballet in a minute.
Well, Nietzsche said music is pure form. I mean, unlike any art, it is pure form. And you even talk in your childhood about hearing those the sounds of jets and trying to actually emulate them in the strong arrangements in some of your recordings. I mean, there's a lot that just steeps you into music from the time you were born.
Well, it's a funny thing. I remember hearing those, there was B-29s flying overhead, and I remembered them. I can write very simple string arrangements. I mean, they have to be really simple, like mostly whole notes, you know. But I like the fifth. I like the interval of a fifth. And I in the strings and the cellos and double basses, I often would write a lot of fifths underneath there. And it would sound like those airplanes. And we looked it up on the internet, on YouTube. There's a recording of, you know, an old film of B-29's landing. And when they're flying over my head where they were before they landed, their engines are exactly in a fifth. And when they start to land, it goes down to a fourth. So I was exactly right. I just threw it out there. I didn't look it up until after the book was published. But, you know, you hear these sounds and they just become incorporated into your music. I heard trains, too. So maybe I would have put a train whistle. I don't know, you know.
What about the effect of, we know, for example, from your mariachi and Mexican-American songs and Mexican songs that you were affected by the experience having Mexican-American father. In fact, you were on with Joan Baez with me, you may recall, when
that's right.
The time when the mariachi was being celebrated here. Well, you're not so bad yourself, kiddo, but you get deeply nostalgic almost in your writing about that, what was a permeable border, turtle soup, you know, going over.
It was fabulous. It was a wonderful place to grow up there by the border. You know, everybody did business back and forth and had done so since the early days before there was a train when all the goods were shipped from the port of Guaymas. So you had to have, if you were going to do business in Tucson, you had to have good business relationships with everybody in northern Mexico. You had to, or you couldn't get anything done.
Your dad had a hardware store?
A big hardware store. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful high-quality stuff in there. Just, not the most expensive, but before there was, you know, the kind of stuff that we get now that's all crummy tools and cheap stuff. It wasn't like a big box store. It was a very personal place you could go. They had a housewares department you could buy. You know, families would come up from Mexico. The wife would buy all the things she needed for the kitchen. The husband would be a rancher. He'd buy a pump and a windmill and a tractor, and it would be great, you know. They'd all go out to dinner, and we'd go to their balls. They had a beautiful, like their debutante ball in Hermosillo. It's called the Blanco y Negro, the black and white ball. We would go to that. They would come up to our balls, and we would go to picnics and baptisms and weddings. It was just fabulous.
And you left it. You left it to become, well, to follow your destiny. You left school or the possibility of continuing college to seek out, I guess, fame and fortune, which both came to you. And in fact, what many of our younger listeners may not know about Linda Ronstadt was that she started out actually with a group. Early on, in fact, the Eagles were a backup band. But she started out with a group called the Stone Ponies. And Danny, let's hear this.
Oh, my God.
A little bit. The giant hit. A lot
it
of
was
those,
indeed. It was a good song, I thought.
Yeah, I love that song. I mean, but a lot of those big hits that you had, you kind of look at now. You're such a perfectionist. You look back, and I could have done that differently. And wow.
Well, that one is particularly, I mean, it was a big hit. I'm thrilled about it, and it was a good piece of material. I'm not putting that down. It was Mike Nesmith did a good job writing that song. But I learned it as a bluegrass song with, you know, with the mandolin and John Harold singing it. And I thought it was a hit. I thought that song was a hit when I heard it. But the record company didn't like the way we had recorded it with a mandolin and an acoustic guitar. It probably wasn't strong enough. Probably wouldn't have gone anywhere.
You did it with a whole orchestra, didn't you?
Yeah. They said, we're going to do it again tomorrow. I came back. There were no Stone Ponies in evidence. They weren't allowed to play, pick up a guitar, anything. Just me. And there was an orchestra in there, and I was just shocked. And there was an arrangement already written out that I hadn't participated in. And it was done in a totally different feel from the way I was used to doing. We did it twice. That was either the first or the second take. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just going, how do I find this song in this arrangement here? You know, and it was a good arrangement. Jimmy Bond did a good job with it, but I didn't understand it. You know, I didn't know what I was doing.
This was such a different era, too. I mean, it was a pre-corporate era. You write about it. No image makers, no hairstylists.
Oh, there was none of that.
None of that stuff. You had your Cub Scout uniform. You had...
Before the Cub Scout uniform. I had some little simple cotton dress that I made on my sewing machine.
Is that the Betsy Johnson dress?
Well, the Betsy Johnson dress came later, too. Right. Well, it was about that time. But I mostly used to sew my own clothes, and if I didn't sew, my mother sewed them for me with matching panties because the skirts were short.
We're talking to Linda Ronstadt. You know what? You come away from your book also realizing how important horses were, not only in your life, but your father actually rode a horse up your mother's sorority house stairs. I mean, this is a great anecdote. But you, it must have been equestrian on so many pictures of you on horseback.
I was just a person that got on the top and stayed there. You know, I'd get on and ride. I wasn't trained in any style. We mostly rode bareback. We were scruffy little riders. We were very, very... You know, I don't know why we were allowed to do that at age five, why we didn't die, but we didn't. We'd just get on our ponies. We'd ride all day. We'd come back. If we didn't come back by sundown, someone would get on another horse and go out and look for us with a flashlight.
You were this modest young woman. Still are, if I may say so. You describe yourself as a girl from the Sonoran Desert.
I am.
And, you know, still very anchored in kind of... good middle class values. And
well, it's hard to find a picture of a Ronstadt that doesn't either have a horse, sometimes a gun. I'm not in favor of guns, but there were a lot of hunters. You know, we lived way out in the country, so they didn't have an animal or a gun in the picture, but mostly a horse. I didn't have so many guns. I was mostly on horseback. But, you know, you just get on and you'd ride like the wind all day long, and then you'd get back at some point because everybody was hungry, including the horse, and everybody would eat and go to bed.
You're not singing now because of Parkinson's. Are you riding?
I can't sing.
Do you ride still?
I can't ride. I can pet horses.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I could ride. I haven't tried, but, you know, there's a lot of balance issues with Parkinson's. But, you know, you never know. I mean, I might get on a horse that might give me some kind of an electrostatic assist, and I might figure out a way to balance, something I haven't investigated. I don't know anybody with horses anymore, which is a shock to me, because my whole life I knew people with horses.
Well,
like me, I had one. They're too expensive now. To
yeah, they're getting pretty costly to have.
They used to be for everyone. You know, I mean, a person on a simple amount of, you know, if you did the work yourself, you could keep a horse at your home, but it's not like that anymore.
No, and you're a Bay Area resident now. You have been for a number of years.
I have hardly room for my cat.
You hardly have room for your cat?
I mean, it's so, you know, it's per square inch in the city. It's just so hard to have, you know, you don't have a house with a big yard and stuff like I grew up in, acreage.
But you're here most of the time now, or are you still going back to Arizona?
Well, I still have a house in Arizona, but I'm selling it if you want to buy it.
You move a lot, don't you?
I do. I don't know why. About every 7 years, I just pack up and get in a moving van and go to the next
place. There's something to that. I want to hear some more of your music. I want listeners to hear some more of your music. It's hard to believe, but young listeners may not be all that familiar with some of the early hits. But so much of your work was done in the rock world, in the rock folk world. But then you had breakouts. I mean, so-called breakouts. You did Pirates of Penzance. You did La Boheme, and then Mexican music, and we had John talking about Cajun music. I mean, you know, it's just really...
When I was writing the book, I was astounded myself that I had gone from one thing to the other like that. It was so extreme. But it didn't seem like it to me at the time, because when I was doing one thing, I was so focused on it that I was just buried in that music, you know. While I was doing Pirates, I was burying myself in the standards that I recorded with Nelson Riddle. I would listen to them all the time and, you know, try to sing them when I wasn't... I mean, you can, when you do a show like Pirates, it's 8 shows a week. You can't really sing in your time off. You have to be very quiet. I couldn't even talk most of the time. But I would sing it in my brain, and I would listen all the time to Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra and Billie Holiday. I was just listening to that stuff over and over again.
Talking with Linda Ronstadt, and her book, her memoir, is out, and it's called Simple Dreams, and she's here with us in studio. And you once said that you felt you had done well on story and voice, but musicianship was... where you really needed to work hard and
I did.
Come up to the bar you had for yourself.
You know, somebody like Bonnie Raitt, you know, that's just, she slides in. I mean, her dad was a great singer. Her mother was his accompanist. She was her own accompanist, you know. They combined those two things. She has extraordinary musicianship. And all of us other girl singers, we all look up to her for that.
Did you do duets with her? Because you did with Emmylou Harris and you did with Dolly Parton. And you did
remember. I think I sang with Bonnie one time at the Little Feet Memorial service, but it was real loud and neither one of us could hear each other. I did a lot of singing with Emmy. She was kind of my singing sister.
Well, let's hear a little more of Linda Ronstadt back in the day. This is, of course, a standout hit, 1977, Blue Bayou from Simple Dreams.
Fishing boats with their sails afloat, if I could only
such a lovely rendering, as were so many of the hits that you took, like Buddy Holly's It's So Easy, and that's a Roy Orbison song, and, you know, you took these what became classic rock songs and just fashioned them with your own musicianship.
Well, the reason I got that song was because I was trying to talk J.D. Southern to give me a couple of new songs that he had written for me. In fact, I found a tape of this night that we spent together, me, J.D., and Jackson Browne. And we were just up all night long playing music. And I kept saying, J.D., give me these songs, give me these songs. He said, no. He said, but you could do this song by Roy Orbison, Blue Bayou. And he taught it to me. And I've got a tape of him teaching it to me. The same night, I was trying to squeeze Jackson for some of his songs, too. But they always wanted to record them on their own records first, you know. So you'd have to wait in line. And then by then, you'd be intimidated by their performance of it. You know, you're scared to record it. But Jackson also taught me Poor Pitiful Me by Warren Zevon. You know, so it was a profitable night that night. We stayed up really late, and I got a bunch of good songs.
Well, talking about profit, there was an article in the New York Times that talked about your dwindling savings. I'm looking at the article. It says, Miss Ronstadt, you know, released many albums but wrote very few songs, so her royalty
honestly,
checks
I'm
are small.
Honestly, I'm so not broke, but I mean, I think I'll
be sold 100 million records. How could you be broke?
Well, I'm not broke, but I mean, I think he was acting like, why? I mean, I'm fine. I have a nice house. I have a nice little house, you know.
Which is up for
and
sale.
My nice little cat. No, that's the one in Tucson. I have two houses, so how bad off is it? I don't know why that guy wrote that. It was an odd thing. He said, why don't you have this, and this, you know, hot and cold running limousines and somebody to answer the door. I mean, my house is so small, I can reach out from the sofa in the living room practically and open the front door. I don't need somebody to answer the door. But he made much of that somehow. I don't know what he was thinking about.
In listening to some of your work through the years, I was really struck by how you could belt out a song. I mean, you know,
that comes from Mexican music, Lola Beltran.
Yeah.
She's the champion belter. That woman had such a golden voice. She was the great voice of Mexico, as Edith Piaf was the great voice of France. And she just had the soul of Mexico in her voice. And she had this rich, huge velvet voice. And, of course, I spent my whole childhood growing up trying to sing like her. And her phrasing, which was very much tied to indigenous Mexican music, not even African-American, not even West African rhythms, you know, but really indigenous Mexican music. There are a lot of complex rhythms there.
So like Phil Everly recently died, and I was thinking you did When Will I Be Loved, which was an Everly Brothers hit.
Yeah.
But you belted out in a way. Is that the Mexican influence of her?
I think so. Because that's what I tried to do my whole life. And this phrasing was so different. I had a really hard time trying to understand rock and roll phrasing. It wasn't until years later when I made an album of Latin jazz standards, Frenesi it was called, with a lot of West African underpinning, that at least I could kind of get the New Orleans influence on rock and roll. And it made everything. I went back to pop music after that. It was amazingly easier. But, you know, trying to attach a huapango to something that's back 2 and 4 is just hard.
I mentioned all the duets that you did. I thought maybe it'd be good to hear a little bit of you singing in a duet. I guess this is Telling Me Lies with Emmylou Harris. Oh, that's tough on men. That's Telling Me Lies. It's from a trio with not only Emmylou Harris, but Dolly Parton as well, singing with Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah, mostly me and Emmy. You know, that was Linda Thompson's song, and her husband had just left her with a brand new baby. You know, and it was a long, complicated story, which I will not go into. I love her husband. I love her. They've since become good friends, but it was just a really hard time, and I remember when Linda was first.
Well, can I quote you on relationships in your book? You talk about sex and vulnerability, and
I do.
You say men are delicate, and it's a wonder that anyone gets laid or has babies with all the cultural stuff that's put on that.
This is in my book?
That's what I read in your book, yeah.
Anybody that ever gets laid or has babies is in my book? I don't think so.
That's what I recall in my mind's head here. You're talking about,
in fact, a little bit of editorial.
Well, no, people are going to be, I suppose, if they're thinking about your relationships with Kermit the Frog or Jerry Brown or George Lucas, there may be.
I had a hot relationship with Kermit. Boy, we had a lot of them. That's kind of interspecies. That's pretty wild.
Well, you did the Shoop Shoop song, in fact, with the Muppets, which I thought was great. No, you do. I mean, you write about your choice to be serial monogamous and to not get married, and these were calculated choices on your part.
Well, they weren't. I mean, I just didn't have a need to get married. There was no advantage for me, you know. I mean, I didn't need the financial support. I didn't need the guaranteed financial support. And I was learning things, and I didn't like being sort of trapped in a situation where if I wanted to learn something over here, I couldn't go over there and learn it, you know. I needed to learn things.
You're kind of hard on yourself, though, too, I think, in some instances. And what I didn't know about your career was that you were constantly, especially early on, struggling with stage fright.
I think everyone struggles with stage fright. And I think that people that say they don't are lying, probably, you know. And I think it's just something that everybody deals with. And it's so ubiquitous that it's almost not even worth bringing up, you know. It's not a natural thing, again, for people to be stared at by other animals in nature. When another animal stares at you, they're usually getting ready to eat you. So when you're standing up on the stage and a lot of other animals are staring at you, it makes you nervous.
You still consider yourself a political activist?
Well, I'm not very active in the public. I have very little leverage. You know, I can't sing anymore, so I can't do concerts and say, you know, this is what I think. But I feel like there are certain things that I advocate for, and whenever I get a chance. One of them is immigration reform, which is holding people in such deep cruelty and separating families and really hurting our culture, creating crime where there would be no crime, you know. And so people that are up here that have, you know, crossed the border in search of work and in search of a better life are often, especially from way south in Mexico, those indigenous societies there are so good at organizing themselves and taking care of themselves. They're the last people that would wind up on welfare. They'll always work if they can have a chance. They'd always prefer work to anything else. And they're very organized. They keep their communities really clean. In Mexico, you go into the towns that are the most Indian, they're the cleanest. The ones that are the most European influenced, they're the filthiest, you know. So, and it's always been that way since the time of the conquest. And those people are very independent. They're very proud. And they get it done. They're very entrepreneurial. They come up, they start a little business with a taco truck or something like that. And the next thing you know, they have a little restaurant. The next thing you know, they have a big restaurant. The next thing you know, they got a hotel. And they're doing just fine. And they always take care of their own people. But we don't allow them to work legally. They're paying huge amounts of taxes into the coffers. They're also paying into Social Security, for which they can't take out. So they're actually making it better for us, not worse for us. And there are a lot of jobs that people up here simply don't want to do. They don't want to do. So it should be that people that come here in search of a better life should be paid fairly, should be not made to do jobs that are so dangerous, you know, that kill you and hurt you for the rest of your life, and are not taken advantage of so that, you know, that like a lot of the farm workers, they'll get their labor. Then they'll call the immigration, and they don't have to pay them.
Coming up on a break, when we come back, we'll talk more with Linda Ronstadt, and we'll bring you into the discussion. Just realized I had a synapse that went over. That was from an interview you did, not from your book about sex and vulnerability. You can join us. We welcome your questions or comments for our guest, Linda Ronstadt. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. Like you, I read too much. 866-733-6786. Or join us by email, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum.
Simple dream.
Linda Ronstadt doing Simple Man, Simple Dream from Simple Dreams. That was the name of the album. That's the name of her memoir, which is now out and available. It is a musical memoir, and she is here with us in studio talking about her career. Who is it? What do people, do you think, associate you most with? Often people say, well, Heart Like a Wheel or Blue Bayou. What did they used to ask you to sing the most, or what were they most excited about and remembered most?
I think Blue Bayou, you know. And I'm glad if it's Heart Like a Wheel. That's a really, really beautiful song. It really changed my life when I found that song. I wanted to do stuff that was had a little bit more depth and substance in the stuff I was finding, you know. And I actually found that in a taxi cab one time real early in the morning. I was with Jerry Jeff Walker. We'd been out all night long, you know, some kind of a jam session at Gary White's house, who wrote Long, Long Time. And we were just pulling up. He was dropping me off at my hotel. He was going uptown, the rest of the way uptown. And he said, you know, I heard these girls at this folk festival in Philadelphia. They're called the McGarrigle Sisters. And they wrote this song, You Ought to Hear It. And he leaned over and he hunched up his shoulders in that way that you do when you're really going to sing only the most sacred material you're storing in your mind. I mean, it's like something that had really moved his heart. And he sang me the first verse of Heart Like a Wheel. And it just killed me. I said, you have to tell them they have to send me this song. Here's my address. You know, they have to send it. And 2 weeks later, thank God, they sent it to me on a reel-to-reel tape it was recorded with just a piano and a cello. And these girls from Canada, just the purest thing you ever heard in your life, absolutely unbridled sentiment. They're not afraid to be corny. They're not afraid to show what's in their heart. But, you know, they do it with such refinement and such intelligence and such true craft. They just blew me away. And I thought, well, there are other people writing these songs about the way that I feel, you know. So there's hope for me, because I was tired of just doing what I call a lot of short note songs, you know, which is rock and roll, which is a lot of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba over it. It's good music, but there wasn't very much for my voice to do, you know. There wasn't very much for me to sing. And I like to kind of, you know, I'm a reader. I like to – they say that people – if you read classic literature – that automatically, even for 20 minutes a day, and I mean not pop, you know, not pot boilers, just real classic literature, that you already have better social skills, you already have a better understanding of sort of how we fit historically into our culture. You know, it's just amazingly beneficial. When I started reading those books, I wanted the music to match what I was learning from writers like Henry James and Edith Wharton and Thomas Hardy and, you know, just unending amounts of great writers that are out there, Dostoevsky and Tolstoy. And
well, as long as I've known you, you have been a major, very serious reader and a lover of literature. But what has always struck me is the fact that with you, it's all about the music, too. I mean, ultimately, I mean, as a career and in terms of performing, as this book points out, it's always been about
the
music.
Well, there's a string of writers that write, you know, the other side, the musical side of that, like Leonard Cohen and Paul Simon, who just sent me the most beautiful song that he's working on. I mean, this guy's still writing at the top of his talent. I don't know if you ever
heard. I saw him at the Black and White Ball when he was here in town.
So Beautiful, yeah. Or So What, that album that he made was just a little masterpiece. It's just brilliant.
That,
Or people like Randy Newman, you know. I mean, they're just amazing singers. That's why I think that the whole Rolling Stone sort of attitude toward what was pop music, what was rock and roll, what wasn't, if it wasn't rock and roll, it wasn't valid, was so silly. What are you going to do with a guy like Paul Simon? What are you going to do with a guy like Randy Newman that just turns up with great material, you know, groundbreaking, incredibly original, that redefines what pop music is for us?
Well, here you are talking about pop music, and I am aware of the fact that you listen mainly to Chopin these days.
Well, I listen to a lot of Ravel and a lot of Debussy. I don't know why. It's just it's the time of our lives, I think, when we're looking back in a certain kind of way.
You don't listen to your music much from the early days, do you?
Only to reference something. You know, I might go, what happened on that? You know, for the book, I had to listen to some stuff just to get an idea of where I was and what I was doing when I was working on it. You know, because when I hear the music, the first thing that comes up is this wave of emotion that was behind my impetus to do that song. And that about kills me. And then the next thing I start to hear is all the mistakes I made or how we developed it. You know, we were learning it in the studio. It's just the first few times you're ever actually going to sing it. So that on the road, you develop the ideas and the phrasing and everything like that. And it gets much better. And I go, why was I stuck back there? Here's the recording. It's stuck back in the very beginning of sort of exploring about something, you know.
You want to listen to what some of the listeners have to say? Can we go to our calls?
Sure.
Let's do that. Let's go first up to Sonoma. Ricky, you're on. Good morning.
Hello. Oh, I am so happy to talk to you. I saw you at Disneyland when I was just a kid and you were just a kid. You were barefoot. You were with the Stone Ponies.
I was actually with the Eagles. They were playing with me. They were my backup band, but you just hadn't heard of them yet because they'd never made a record.
Oh my God.
I was singing with Smokey Robinson. He was also on the bill.
And you did a Motown version with Smokey Robinson. You sang Baby Baby together.
Ooh, Baby Baby,
and then
yeah.
You did Tracks of My Tears. You came out on this revolving chair. Remember this? Do you remember that? Smokey came out and he started doing Baby Baby, and then you came out on a chair that just was brought right to the front of the stage, and he said, "Miss Linda Ronstadt," and there you stood in an evening gown and did this duet with him. It was marvelous.
On television?
Yeah.
Oh, that must have been the Motown 20th anniversary.
That's exactly what it was, yeah. I'm sorry, Ricky, go ahead. Do your memories.
You were just amazing, and I remember, you know, when my friends and I were going home, we sang every one of your songs. We bought your, you know, your, at that time it was the 4-track or, you know, records.
8-track, yeah.
8-track, thank you. Oh, my God, see how I'm old. I'm getting old. But thank you for all your years of music, and you're just an amazing woman. I just am so happy to speak to you today.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Ricky, and appreciate your call. And here we've got Ellen calling. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. this is a different subject. Miss Ronstadt, I want to share with you that right here in Woodside, California, is something called Equine Facilitated Therapy. And they put children with cerebral palsy, adults with disabilities on horses, and they work with them. And all you have to do is Google Equine Facilitated Therapy, Woodside, California, and you'll find it. Excuse me.
Ellen, do you know that they work with people who have Parkinson's?
Do
you know?
I'm sure they do.
Yeah. That's a great suggestion. Thank you for calling me with that, because I'm looking for a horse to be my friend.
Well, you will find horse people that are willing to be your friend, and
great. It's
a marvelous
program. I love Woodside. It's beautiful down there.
Yes.
Ellen, thank you for that suggestion. Appreciate that, and we're going to get another caller on here. That's you, Neil. Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering, have you ever heard any genuine, authentic Mexican music in movies? I'm thinking specifically of Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch, which had a lot of genuine Mexican music, though it didn't make it onto the soundtrack. Oh, one more question. What was the name of that singer you said was the soul of Mexico?
Lola Beltran.
Lola Beltran?
Lola Beltran, Beltran, Beltran.
And your first question, Neil?
Have you ever heard any authentic Mexican music in movies? I'm thinking.
I grew up listening to authentic Mexican music. I'm an authentic Mexican.
In movies, he wants to know.
I wasn't in the movies, but I was authentic. There's a whole tradition, you know, Cuco Sanchez and the Trio Los Panchos and the Trio Calaveras. They often had a little cameo in a movie or. You know, Mariachi Vargas or Lola Beltran, she made a lot of...
I'm afraid you'd hear those kind of chords that would be discordant going off also when Mexican villains would come on the scene or, you know, the kind of a Clint Eastwood movie or something.
But I don't know anything about that, you know. I don't know anything
Neil,
about
thanks
that.
For
I
the...
don't know how authentic that stuff is.
Thanks for the question. We want to get another caller on, and that's Beth. Hi, Beth.
Hi, thank you for having me on. Linda, I also grew up in Arizona. I grew up in the 70s and 80s listening to your music. With my family, grew up in Phoenix, spent a lot of time in Flagstaff and Prescott, also riding horses all summer long. Every time I go home, I am just saddened by the loss of culture. I feel like I grew up in a magical place where there's a confluence of Native American, Mexican, and kind of pioneer spirit. And it feels very missing to me, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on the kind of present state of the Arizona culture.
Well, I feel that way too. You know, when I go, I mean, I feel like Arizona was a real place where you felt like there was a there. And when I went away from there, I felt like I took that with me. I took that place with me, and that defined who I was in many, many ways. When I go back, I'm pretty sad because the developers have raked up the earth so much that they're creating these huge dust storms. And I fear, you know, after reading Timothy Egan's book, that we have a new dust storm in the making. At a new dust bowl in the making, and it's a real threat, and they're pumping all the groundwater out. There's not enough water. They're overdeveloping it. When I want to have that experience now, I go farther south to Mexico, to the little town where my grandfather was born, It's just exquisitely beautiful little valley. It's full of...
What's the name of the town?
It's called Banamichi. It's in northern Mexico along the Rio Sonora. And it's a, you know, they're still farming and ranching the way they did 500 years ago. It's just a beautiful, lovely, gentle, gorgeous place. It's not so gentle. The desert's never gentle. It has stickers and it has bugs and it has snakes and all kinds of things. It's harsh, but it's beautiful.
And let me thank Beth for the call and go to some of our comments from listeners on email and website. Jim writes, thanks for all the joy your music brought. Great singer, great person. Another listener writes on our website, I met Linda Ronstadt when she moved into the shotgun duplex in Santa Monica with an earshot of the beach that I was living in when I was a senior at UCLA back in the 60s. She had just arrived from Arizona with her band. We once went to see Maria Muldaur perform. I was impressed by what a genuine person she seemed to be, grounded with a sense of humor and intellectually curious as well. Of course, she was also so charismatic and talented that I suspect many males couldn't form complete sentences in her presence, but that hotness was wrapped around a lively mind, as shown by her musical explorations. I particularly enjoyed her renditions of traditional Mexican music. And Mike says, thanks for making such enjoyable and memorable music, and says, as a longtime Stride jazz pianist and record producer, I've admired your fine artistry for years. How did you come to choose the wonderful arranger Nelson Riddle for your groundbreaking Great American Songbook recordings? And what was he like to work with? Were you a one- or two-take singer in the studio, or did you spend many hours on one tune?
Well, we didn't have enough. I mean, you couldn't afford to spend a lot of hours. You had, you know, 40 musicians you were paying by the hour, plus the arranger, plus the... It was beat the clock. You just get in the... You were lucky if you got to sing it three times. And what's new, which I'd never sung in that key ever in my life and never heard the arrangement before, I stepped up to the microphone. I sang it twice. We used the first take. So that's the first time I ever sang that song in that key. And the reason that I chose Nelson Riddle is because I heard him on the Frank Sinatra record, Only for the Lonely, Only the Lonely, which is a brilliant record.
Another great Roy Orbison song. Listener tweets, you would have expected this. I know the answer. Are you still in touch with Jerry Brown? Your romance reminds me of Swift and Stiles, too white hot to last long. Well,
he was in my house Christmas Eve with his wife, Ann. Yeah, she's a lovely person.
She is lovely.
like her so much.
And it's changed his life immensely.
For the better. He wears his shoes match now. It's good.
Didn't you sing My Boyfriend's Back, the old song?
I did.
Yeah, when he was running for president. Linda, Pete writes, Linda, this is another tweet, has brought tears to my eyes once from her surprise performance at Neil Young's Bridge School benefit. And Jim writes, it's wonderful listening to Miss Ronstadt this morning. There's a happiness and joy in her voice that makes me happy to hear her speak. I'll look for her new book. I hope there's an audiobook version narrated by her. Thank you for sharing your stories this morning. You've been struggling with that audio version because of Parkinson's, yeah?
Yeah, it's hard. You know, Parkinson's is a movement disorder, so anything that involves movement, like your tongue, I have to think about it, you know? I have to make it move. It's not whatever you do normally, just kind of without thinking about, you know, brushing your teeth, washing your hair, standing up, walking. It's not, you know, it's all affected.
Here's Alfred, who writes, as a member of Bill Graham Presents, I worked a number of Linda Ronstadt shows. She is a wonderful singer of ballads and pop, but her greatest addition to her songbook was the collection of songs from her Mexican connection. The biggest was her partnership with Luis Valdez. I'll never forget her concert with Tito Puente in San Francisco in the early 1990s. And Doug says, any truth to the legend or rumor that you used to sing in the choir of the Swedenborgian Church in Pacific Heights? If so, a word or two I can use next time I'm bragging about it.
It's true. I did sing in the choir. It's the best. It's a Maybach building. I think it's one of the only perfect. I'm not religious. Lightning would strike.
You're not a Swedenborgian?
Well, I like the Swedenborgians. I like them because they're very into nature, you know. It's very ancient kind of
almost pagan.
Mystical.
Yeah.
They're pagan. They're good pagans. You know, I'm not much of a Christian. So
another listener writes, two musical traditions I've never heard Miss Ronstadt singer discuss her Portuguese fado and Bulgarian women's, largely a cappella, choral music. Both blend in Western European music with a very different tradition, West African in the case of fado, Turkish modal music in the case of Bulgarian. With these and other musics, I wonder whether Miss Ronstadt has ever looked past America's more familiar musical roots.
Oh, my God. Well, Bulgarian music. I did talk about Bulgarian music in the book. What he's saying? I sang with Janka Rupina.
Maybe wondering why you didn't. He wasn't familiar with it or something. Yeah. And Skip says the arguments Linda is stating about immigration reform seem to indicate that these Mexican people would be much better off staying home and living in the culture that they know. In the United States, these illegal immigrants are exposed to organized crime, expensive taxes, prey to exploitation, etc. The answer is to enforce our immigration laws. Why can't you see that, Linda?
It isn't. He's completely wrong. Lots of times people can't stay there because they can't make a living, because NASA has made it so that that Mexican farm prices are so terribly undercut by, you know, by our factory farms up here. and they can't make a living, and they're forced into the cities, and the cities are full of crime, and they come up here because they can make more money. They need to send. They're very brave. They're very resourceful. They come up. They travel long distances. They're great highwaymen, and they send money back to their families.
A lot fewer were coming up during the recession, but we're now having somewhat of an economic
comeback. Well, now people all over the world are starting to migrate to Mexico because the jobs, the Mexican middle class is starting to get better, and the jobs are going to be there. People are going to start migrating from here down to there.
And the violence with the drug problem has somewhat abated, but it's still, you know, a major problem.
It's still very bad in places like Michoacán. If you live there, you try to get away from that.
Paul writes, when I was volunteering at the Berkeley Free Clinic in the late 1970s, I spent many nights in a back room running the mimeograph machine and singing along with a tape of Linda's greatest hits. It really taught me a lot about singing, phrasing, modulation. I'm so sad now that I know we'll never have a chance to sing a duet.
Or with the mimeograph machine. That's a long time ago. That's the 60s, the 50s.
You're right.
Those things.
Another listener tweets, does Linda have any plans to participate and read at Litquake this fall? Would be great to hear her read.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, Litquake's the literary event that started with the San Francisco Examiner back in the day and now has become a major event bringing writers and literary events.
Well, if they'll invite me, I'll go.
Okay, you
heard
that.
I have the car fare.
Are you listening, Jane Ganell? Pete says, can Linda teach me to sing?
I can't teach anyone to sing. Singing is very personal. But I can talk to you about why you want to sing.
I want to hear a song that I particularly favor that you did. And again, it's American pop classic, but let's hear a little bit, Denny, of You're No Good. You're No Good. There again is that belting that I was talking about before. I mean, you do it so well there. And a listener question here says, Dear Linda, wow, as Frida writes, you're not just a great musician, but now we hear you're a serious reader of literature as well. Clearly, you're not letting your Parkinson's disease get you down. Still, would you tell us Parkies a little bit about your experience with Parkinson's disease? What is working for you? How do you keep your sense of humor?
Well, there's... It's the only thing I've got left. You know, I mean, people call me, but they go, how do you feel? I go, well, I feel fine as long as I'm lying down, you know, as long as I'm holding still and I don't try to move. Because once you start to move, it's like being on the moon. You just, you know, whatever used to be level and whatever used to be over there, you know, there's no proprioception left.
But your attitude is so terrific. I mean, I know you've been told that. It's who you are, and it sustains you through this.
Well, it better, because if you can't, you know, you can't let it get you down, because once it does, you'll drown.
Miss Francis says, thank you for talking with Miss Ronstadt. I have enjoyed all of her music through my life, from teen years to the present, more mature years. My favorite song is Someone to Lay Down Beside Me. But my favorite memory is when she performed on PBS with several other female singers in the Nelson Riddle Band, I think. During one of the songs, the bubble machine started blowing bubbles in their faces, and they all stopped and laughed. It was fun and real. Miss Ronstadt's diversity has provided so much listening pleasure. Thank you. Henry writes, thanks for making my day. Linda Ronstadt was very popular in my family, beginning with her late 70s work. Her Canciones de mi Padre was such a hit in our home. Listening to her words and music is taking me back to a happy childhood place. You give a lot of people joy.
Well, that's good. That makes me feel good. At least it was for something. You know, it did some good. You know, for me, all the music was live because I was there at the time. So recorded music is weird to me to hear back, especially my own recording.
Still hear yourself singing in your mind, don't you, in your head?
Yeah, but I'm always pushing it to the next thing, you know, because, I mean, the voice that I used on You're No Good is a completely different voice from the voice I used in the Nelson Riddle stuff, and a completely different voice from what I used in Pirates, and absolutely completely different from what the voice I used when I returned to pop music after all those experiences after singing. Mexican music was what really put it together. You know, it was singing with Nelson Riddle and singing Mexican music where my natural, authentic voice really was allowed to assert itself.
Here's
I wasn't
Gary
worried about any trend or any style, you know, just singing who
just
I was.
Just doing it, yeah. Here's Gary Grass Valley who writes, I love your voice, especially the mastery which allowed you to range from gentle to tremendous power. I've never heard a more beautiful voice. Thank you for your exceptional work. A listener writes, I grew up in Peshawar, Pakistan, and my parents were huge fans of yours, and I loved the video of One Love, Get Closer. I had my mom sew me a red polka dot dress like you wore in the video, and I started kindergarten wearing that dress. Just wanted to share that memory.
How nice. Peshawar. That's interesting.
Carolyn writes, when my father passed away a few years ago, my brother put together a mixed CD of songs he wanted played at his funeral. They included a few songs from your album Canciones de Mi Padre. We had both a priest and a pastor. The music was playing in the background. When the priest and pastor paused at the back of the room before walking up to the front together, the attendees got quiet and Tata Dios was playing. It was the most appropriate music and the most beautiful moment. Thank you for helping me make my daddy's funeral so special.
Well, that was my father's funeral too, that song. So we share that.
Pam says, we remember with such pleasure Mr. Ronstadt's sparkling performance with Kevin Kline in Pirates of Penzance on Broadway. Still definitive production for us. Thank you. Carlos says, when I listen to my old bluegrass albums with Linda and the Seldom Scene, it's a wonderful nostalgic trip back home to D.C. for me. And he wants actually to remember the old bluegrass days with John Duffy and the crew. And there's a lot of nostalgia, a lot of sentiment, but a lot of love coming through here. I want you to know.
Well, thank you. That's nice.
And tribute, testimonials to just how much of an effect you've had on so many lives. The book, again, is Simple Dreams, a musical memoir by Linda Ronstadt. And she's here with us in studio. You're listening to Forum. We've been able to hear some of her music. And we want to remind you that this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support this radio station, your radio station, KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller. We go to San Mateo and we welcome Ann. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you to you, Michael, for all your wonderful shows. And hello, Linda.
Hi.
Well, first of all, I changed my whole morning schedule just to listen to this interview.
Good.
Appreciate all the music that you've done since the 60s. I have sung all your songs. And when I was younger, I pretended I was Linda Ronstadt. I just so enjoyed your music, and I know so many people have. And I a couple times sang with a little rock and roll band local, and I loved singing your music.
Well, good. I think everybody should do their own singing. I'm a real believer in it.
Find your own voice.
We shouldn't delegate music to professionals. We shouldn't delegate dancing to professionals. We shouldn't delegate visual art to professionals. It's good to have heroes, but you got to do your own, too.
Well, you helped me learn how to do that, listening to your music.
I'm so
someone
glad.
Someone else mentioned, I think, phrasing, and it was wonderful. Just wonderful. And it made my voice soar. So, thank you.
Well, thanks for the call, Ann. Good to hear from you. And we'll hear next from Teresa. Joins us from San Leandro. Morning, Teresa.
Oh, good morning. Excuse me, this is so exciting. It's the first time I've called in and also to speak to Ms. Ronstadt. I grew up with your music like so many people did. And I love singing and I love seeing your music along with almost any other kind.
Thank you.
I called specifically to invite you. I have a horse that I keep in the Oakland Hills at a stable there. And she's not one that you could ride, but you're more than welcome to come and visit the stable and all the horses anytime.
Horses are good for petting their nice, soft noses. That's what I like.
Yes, well,
that's a very sweet
feeding carrots
to
too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They're good for feeding carrots too.
Oh, carrots! But anyway,
lawn decorations. They make good lawn decorations.
If you'd like to come visit the stable, it's a wonderful place, and you'd be welcome anytime.
That's a sweet offer. Thank you.
Yeah, nice invitation. Thank you, Teresa. And we'll hear next from Steve, who's joining us from up in Petaluma. Steve, hi.
Hi. I'm a friend of Maria Muldaur's, who is a friend, longtime friend of yours, and
right.
We've had several discussions about your singing and how wonderful it is for her to appear with you.
Maria sang in Pirates of Penzance also.
Yeah. The two of you are just remarkable performers. I wanted to also...
We should mention Maria still lives out here, I believe, doesn't
yeah,
she?
She's such a good
singer.
She lives
in Marin.
Yeah.
And she's on tour now, or she might be calling in herself.
Talk about musicianship. Maria had that to spare, you know. I mean, we were all just in awe of Maria. I remember having a conversation with Janis Joplin one time. It's in my book. I ran into her at the Troubadour, and we both agreed that Maria was just the godhead at that point. You know, we loved her. She was beautiful. She was incredibly funky. She was soulful. She had great musicianship. She could really phrase. And she played dirty blues fiddle.
Yes. she hasn't played the fiddle lately. But what's always stunned me about listening to her in any kind of musical format is that I can understand every single word she sings.
And she means it.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Anyway, she says hi.
Great.
And I wanted to compliment you on your work with immigration. I work with the IAF around for the last 5 years. We've been trying to get police to quit impounding poor people's cars.
Oh, it's so terrible. And then they can't work at all. And then, counterproductive.
It costs them more than the vehicle is worth to get it out of the 30-day impound. It's really an atrocity. So we've been working with local police in Sonoma County and making headway on that.
Well, great. Good luck to you on that score, Steve, and appreciate your call. I want to read a couple more web postings. Betty posts, Linda is bringing back many memories for me today from my years in Tucson in the late 70s and early 80s, the jet sounds and train whistles, my lifelong love for horses and desert riding. I worked at the Mountain Oyster Club, a stone's throw from Ronstadt's Hardware, and her father was by far the nicest member of that club. As I recall, he loved going to the Wildcats football games and would get an entire pecan pie from the club to bring to each game. Thanks, Linda, for bringing us so much great music over the years, and I hope you will be on horseback once more before long.
Great. I hope so, too.
And another listener writes, Canciones de mi padre was a huge gift to my large Mexican-American family. Some of us grew up in Mexico. Some of us have never been there. But that album was a celebration of our culture for all of us. It played at all our gatherings and brought us together. And thanks to Frenesi, I learned Perfidia, which made my tío so happy. And thank you. Well, like I say, you get a lot of love here. And we wish you the best, and good luck with this new book.
Thank you, and thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Always pleased to have you here, and delighted to have you. In fact, I thought maybe we'd go out with a kind of crooning song that happens to be one of my favorites. This is Linda Ronstadt singing Baby Baby, a Smokey Robinson song.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.